1324208CR, Ana Mercedes Gutierrez versus the state of Texas.
May it please the court?
Yes.
My name is Billy Pavord. I'm here with my co-counsel, Jack Winfrey, on behalf of Ms. Ana Mercedes Gutierrez. First, we'd like to thank y'all for coming out here. We know you guys traveled and we really appreciate the opportunity to argue before y'all. We bring four claims before the court today. I'm going to begin with the first one. Ms. Gutierrez's conviction should be set aside and her cause dismissed because the state impermissibly regulated a federally preempted field, non-citizen smuggling. As the Fourth Court recently noted in State versus Flores, courts generally agree that the manifest purpose of Congress was to completely oust state power from the field of smuggling of non-citizens. That is to say, through the passage of 1324, the federal smuggling statute, and its incorporation into the Immigration and Nationality Act, Congress left no room for analogous state crimes. We're here to argue that this must mean they left no room for analogous states' prosecutions. When making this statement, the Fourth Court relied on four federal appellate decisions and one state Supreme Court decision that found that the states in question there impermissibly regulated a preempted field. These courts answered three questions when coming to this determination. First, they identified a special federal interest. Here, we have immigration. And immigration is treated differently. Courts routinely talk about the need to have one voice on immigration regulation matters as opposed to 50 separate voices. One other fact that I'd like to bring to this court that wasn't in my briefing that leads to a finding of a special federal interest is the history of non-citizen smuggling. I've identified 12 other states, along with Texas, that have attempted to explicitly codify non-citizen smuggling. The earliest was in Colorado in 2006. Seven of those states have had those laws overturned. The other five have no reporting decisions, suggesting that they're not enforcing these laws.
And in the Flores opinion, the Fourth Court, which of course we know is this court has already, the Fourth Court has already decided that on its face, this statute is not preempted. And so you're going to try to persuade us why an as applied challenge should prevail. But the Fourth Court noted that the statute was enacted to address the problems with coyotes that were, I guess, bringing people into the country. So that is seems to be its express purpose to deal with smuggling of citizens into the country or non-citizens into the country.
Yes, I understand that, Your Honor. However, I do think it's relevant that only 13 states have explicitly tried to enter this field. So yes, Texas didn't explicitly make that an element of offense. They did so in 2015. And again, I note that this law was passed in 1999 when they made those comments. Well, let's compare that to the federal smuggling statute, 1324, that has existed in some form or another for over 100 years.
But, you know, we are bound by the Fourth Court of Appeals decision in this case. So, you know, it's not preempted. The statute is not preempted. It's a neutral language is what the court decided. Explain to us how it is that how it was applied to Ms. Gutierrez that makes it then a violation.
The record makes clear that the state was primarily concerned with the non-citizenship status. The state produced no evidence to suggest why Ms. Gutierrez would otherwise attempt to smuggle her passengers. Without the non-citizenship status, this case is likely legally insufficient, right? So we would argue that if federal preemption prevents an explicit codification, then the state cannot apply an otherwise neutral statute to prove an element of the offense. So here, non-citizenship status was used to prove that she had the intent to conceal. Returning to the cases.
But for the fact that these individuals that were in her car were they were Mexican citizens, I believe, were they?
That's not in the record, okay. Actually.
Or non-US citizens, she wouldn't have been arrested.
That's, yes, and you could see that on page 50 of the trial record. The state's only witness confirmed that she made the decision to make an arrest once Border Patrol told her that the passengers were in the country illegally. Returning to those cases cited by the Fourth Court, after determining that there was a special federal interest, they identified a expansive regulatory scheme. One fee, All the courts answered that yes, 1324 and other provisions of non-citizen smuggling, 1327 and 1328, highlighted such a scheme. One feature of this scheme that I would like to bring to this court is the fact that the scheme explicitly contemplates the state's involvement. So 1324C says that states can make arrests for non-citizen smuggling, but makes no indication or does not contemplate state prosecution.
Right. So they could have arrested her in this case, but then turned it over to the feds.
And referred for prosecution. Let's compare this to the federal human trafficking regime in 7105, C3, C3C, excuse me. That explicitly contemplates state arrests and state prosecutions. So, as opposed to the federal smuggling regime, there was no contemplated authority for states to bring this sort of prosecution. The final question answered, we actually have already gone over, but whether or not the state entered the federally preempted field. In this case, we believe the answer is yes. Do I have any other questions on federal preemption?
Well, I do have a question about the Colorado case, which I did, the Fuentes Espinosa case, which is a very interesting case. But the statute in that Colorado case did not use neutral language as we have here. So is that a distinction?
It is a distinction, Your Honor. That was a facial attack. However, the federal preemption principles apply for facial attacks and as applied attacks. It would be nonsensical if the states could use a neutral statute to enter into a federally preempted field, but they couldn't explicitly codify it.
Okay, that answers. Thank you.
No more questions on preemption?
I don't know.
Okay. I'd like to move on to our second challenge. The lower court erred when it refused to strike two for-cause, excuse me, when it refused to grant two for-cause strikes to two veneermen that refused to state that they would presume Ms. Gutierrez innocent. Here we have veneermen 35 and veneermen 16. Their last answer was their consistent answer. In veneermen 35's case, he was asked by defense counsel, "And you're going to need to see something from us to prove her innocence." He said, "Right, you're going to have to show me something, yes." This case is clearly controlled by the Court of Criminal Appeals decision in Homan versus State. In that case, the Court of Criminal Appeals said, "Veneermen must be struck if they refuse to state that they would presume a defendant innocent." In that case, the veneermen said that he thought just because the defendant was indicted, that the defendant there was a little bit guilty. We have the same answer here in both of our cases, in both of our veneermen issues. Moving on, if there's no more questions about this challenge.
Well, I think that's just, we're just going to have to look closely at it because the state, you know what the state's arguing, starts arguing that they also agreed that they would put that aside and be fair and decide the case on the evidence. So.
Yeah, and so I would just like to address that. Deciding the case on the evidence isn't stating that you would presume Ms. Gutierrez is innocent, right? The presumption of innocence requires that the state bring enough quality and quantity of evidence to prove their guilt. And so just saying, "I will look at the evidence," isn't an affirmative statement that they would follow the law. And in Veneermen 35's case, he said he would need evidence from the defense, right? That's clear
So he's
violation.
starting at a disadvantage.
Yes, Your Honor. And the law requires that we're presumed innocent. I would also like to address another one of the state's arguments. They argue that the veneer must have been confused. They never once in their briefing state that the veneerman would presume us innocent. And I would just like to note that, one, there's no evidence of confusion in the record, but two, even if they were confused, veneermen have to follow the law, right? And so the source, it doesn't really matter if they have like bad intentions, they just hate criminal defendants, or that they're confused. If they won't follow the law, they should have been struck for cause. And that's what we have here. Going on to our third challenge, unless there's any more questions. Great. I'm here to answer questions.
We'll come back to it if we think something. So don't, you can keep going.
Please, I'll be here for the next 5 minutes. So, as to our third challenge, the state's only witness, Kinney County Deputy Mendez, should not have been allowed to testify about what Border Patrol told her, that the passengers were in the country illegally. Importantly, this is a two levels of hearsay problem. The night of the arrests, The passengers were taken to Border Patrol. Once at Border Patrol, it was determined that they are in the country illegally. That's the first level of hearsay. The second level of hearsay is what Border Patrol then told the Kinney County deputy who is still at the scene with Ms. Gutierrez. So once Deputy Mendez got this information from Border Patrol, she decided to make an arrest. This testimony violates both the Confrontation Clause and is inadmissible hearsay. It violates the Confrontation Clause because Deputy Mendez said on page 65 of the trial transcript that her job was only concerned with Ms. Gutierrez and her co-defendant. Her job was not to deal with immigration law. So she was asking this question to make a decision about whether or not a smuggling incident had occurred. Importantly, the passengers were not even in the state's custody. So she wasn't determining an emergency situation, and she wasn't collecting biographical information at that point, because again, we're challenging the second level of hearsay. We argue that this is harmful. Let me go back to the hearsay question. I apologize. So it was a statement used to prove the truth of the matter asserted. The state relied on the passenger's non-citizenship status to prove that Ms. Gutierrez had the intent to conceal her passengers. There was no limiting instruction given. We argue that this was harmful because, one, it satisfied an element of the offense. And then again, on page 65 of the trial transcript, Deputy Mendez said that she could not
Well, how did
ascertain.
it satisfy an element of the offense? Because their legal status is not an element of the offense. It's only whether she was concealing, right? What's the statute say?
It's intent to conceal, Your Honor.
Intent to conceal.
But that was the only evidence put forth about why Ms. Gutierrez would want to conceal her passengers. Because her passengers were in the country illegally, they must have, Ms. Gutierrez must have had the intent to conceal them. This was the heart of the case. And on page 65 of the trial transcript, the state's only witness said that the identification cards themselves could not have proven the passenger's legal status. So she needed Border Patrol's confirmation, and that was the only evidence produced at trial that the state could present to the jury. Are there any questions about the Confrontation Clause
So
or
had
here?
the state called the Border Patrol to testify, you would be making this argument.
Yes, I would not. Right. And so, the state deputy retold what Border Patrol told her, right? And her job was to investigate a smuggling incident.
There's no exception to that based on her investigation or anything like that.
No, I don't believe so.
Can't police officers rely, I'm trying to remember, on that statements made by other investigating officers? Can't she rely on that testimony in her own investigation?
I do believe she can rely on that testimony, but first, the Confrontation Clause is a right in and of itself. So Ms. Gutierrez has the right to confront the witnesses against her. And here it was Border Patrol that determined the passengers were in the country illegally. And then it's still an out-of-court statement, so a hearsay exception should apply. So she can rely on that, but she cannot testify to that unless an exception is applicable. Moving on to our last challenge, we bring another evidentiary challenge. This is only a hearsay challenge. The state's only witness, again, testified that the passengers identified themselves with Mexican ID cards. What we're challenging is what she said those ID cards said, that the passengers were Mexican nationals. Again, two levels of hearsay because the ID cards themselves were not admitted into the record. So we're relying on what the state's witness said the Mexican ID cards said, that they were Mexican nationals. This was an out-of-court statement and no hearsay exception should apply. The state, once we made our objection, the state produced no evidence to suggest why the ID card couldn't be available or why the passengers couldn't testify themselves. We think this was harmful because the state, again, case in chief, was dependent on what the passengers, who the passengers were. The fact that the passengers were Mexican nationals likely had more than a slight effect on the jury. One quick point I would like to make before my time is up is that we do not need to find harm on the fourth claim to win on harm on the third claim, because first, our third claim involves a confrontation clause. A confrontation clause analysis looks at the challenge testimony itself. It doesn't look as to whether or not the jury could have made a decision otherwise. So if the Border Patrol's confirmation affected the jury beyond a reasonable doubt, I believe is the standard, then harm should be found and we should be granted a new trial. If there are no more questions, I'll cede the rest of my time.
Thank you.
May it please the court,
You may proceed.
counsel. My name is Nelson Barnes. I'm here on behalf of the 63rd Judicial District, and I'm here with the Honorable Suzanne West, the elected district attorney from the 63rd Judicial District. We're pleased to be here before the court today in this matter, and obviously our position is directly opposed to that of counsel who spoke in front of me. We do feel that the Flores case has found that, as the court has noted, that 2005 is not federally preempted. I think the justices have noted that in all of those other states, there was a piece of that statute that was found preempted that penalized the status of the person being smuggled, that their immigration status was a piece of the statute and a piece of that crime. Texas has a facially neutral statute in regards to that. This statute can apply outside the field of immigration. It can be applied to people who are hiding children from CPS. It can be applied to people who are hiding people who are fleeing from other crimes. It could hide people who are trying to avoid service.
But it is possible, isn't it, for a statute to not be preempted facially, but be preempted as applied basis?
Has applied, yes, ma'am. That would be correct. But we don't feel that this statute, even in this case, as applied, would be preempted.
Well, but would she have been prosecuted if her passengers were found to be in the U.S. legally?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe she still could be prosecuted
How so?
because the statute doesn't require that status. It requires that she is concealing individuals. Those individuals would have been slumped in the back seat. She made movements in her path of travel that would show concealment. The record shows where she made a left to avoid what would have been a checkpoint situation. That may tie into the fact that this is because this intent was that they were illegal, but that would not be required as part of the statute. She had dark tinted windows. It was at 11 o'clock at night. She was on a road that people do not normally drive on as part of the normal path of travel in that area. All of that was reflected in the testimony to show her intent to conceal, completely outside of the status of these individuals.
So if that's true, why is the testimony so important as to the status of these individuals in order to prove the state's case? I mean, that was the whole point.
I think the purpose of the kind of jumping into part of their argument
Sure.
in the hearsay issue as well is that the ID cards were also partly just to identify these people as separate individuals. The case was charged as three separate counts of violations of 2005. It identified those individuals separately by name. Whether those names were true or not didn't matter. They were merely an identifier, as if we would might have said first name unknown, last name unknown, individual in blue shirt, red shirt, black shirt. But
But why were they called then Mexican IDs and told they were Mexican citizens?
that was
I mean,
to
I agree with you. You could have put the date, the names, but then why identify them?
the, I think, to show motive, which was not an element of the offense, but it was there, and the state is allowed to prove motive if they have it, but it's not required.
But what do we do with the fact that the officer said the only reason she arrested her was because she confirmed that these three individuals were not U.S. citizens. That was the basis for the arrest.
That the officer may have had that in part of her mind as to probable cause, but it doesn't change the fact that the crime can be prosecuted without that belief of probable cause. Much as the same, I would equate that kind of the situation in Wren, where when we talk about, precursor stops and we don't go into the mind of the officer, was there probable cause? In this case, there is probable cause without that. The driving, the time of night, the place, the tinted windows, the slouching of the people in the back seat. All of those issues still give us this crime without that motive piece. The jury could have conceivably completely disregarded the motive or found it to be wrong and still found this person guilty of the offense.
But it's kind of asking us to unring a bell, it's asking us to ignore evidence that we know is in the forefront of this case. And that's what gives me pause.
I don't ask you to ignore it, Justice. I ask you to consider that it is a sideline to the fact issue of what is, how was this evidence proceeded? And we know the jury was charged that the benefit of this was the intent to conceal. And not to ignore that those facts were all placed in front of the jury just as much as they claim objectionable sideline information regarding identity and motive. Those issues don't change, but those issues as well are not the element of the crime. And we go back to the preemption argument as to why the statute is valid, as the Flores court found. In fact, one of the preemption arguments is the where there's no cases that say that this is, you know, can't do this statewide. And the defense argues, well, they said the state can arrest for this, so that must mean that the state can't prosecute it. And in human trafficking, that is not said that way. But that doesn't mean the state can't criminalize other behavior that is outside of that status. And that's what 2005 does. And 2005 has other parts of it that come into play that don't have to have anything to do with status, as in the criminal trespass section where you lead people across land. That can be occurred by anybody from anywhere. And there also is violations of federal law, which people lead to think involves immigration, but could involve harboring or transporting someone who has brought drugs into the country just as easily as it is with immigration. It says federal law, not federal immigration law. So I believe the statute can stand on those things. And the Fifth Circuit has actually relied on convictions under 2005 to support immigration court decisions to remove people from the country for violations of moral turpitude. In Fuentes Cruz versus Gonzalez, 49 Federal 3rd, 724, the conviction under 2005 was the basis for a moral turpitude denial of or a removal from the country that was appealed, and it was found that was a valid reason for that removal. Now, if there's any other questions on the preemption, or I'm kind of crossed over in the hearsay as well.
That's
Justice,
okay. Go ahead.
I would like to respond to their questions regarding the veneer, and I don't want to take your time just to take your time. I want to focus on what the court wants to focus on. But I did find, and I just have to point this out to this court because the things strike me, that the two jurors in this case are jurors 35 and 16, and it's 35-16 is the Code of Criminal Procedure regarding veneer. So strange or not, how we got here. In their claims in regards to the jurors coming in predisposed, the state argues, as we did in the brief, that we feel the defense kind of threw this poison pill using that Homan language into the voir dire. Wouldn't you agree with me after talking about if people have been arrested and here's what reasonable suspicion is and here's what probable cause is, wouldn't you agree with me that most people are a little bit guilty? And that's in their voir dire. And they throw that pill in and then later challenge about 80% of the voir dire when they raise this issue into their mind and say, won't you agree with me on that? Because that's what statistics show. And they lay it out as fact to the jurors and then come back and say, now you got to strike them all. Now you got to be rid of this panel. I think that the court, when we look at the abuse of discretion, that we would look at a standard of what the judge does in working voir dire, and we look at those statements, that those jurors vacillated. I'm not going to argue that they didn't, but they also vacillated where it's unclear, are they responding to, you got to bring me something? Who are they looking at? Are they looking at the state or are they looking at counsel?
But if there is such a confusion, isn't the proper standard to strike them and not to leave them on the jury panel? That's the problem. We have to err on that side, not the error of leaving them.
Justice, I could see where we would make that argument in regards to that, but the court is there to look at them and make that decision. How they said it, who were they looking at? All those things we can't tell from the record, but we know that the trial court is there looking at those issues to determine, are these people good jurors or not? And this judge struck a lot of jurors This was not like these were the only people that we left on this panel. This court made the decision to move a lot of jurors off this panel and granted their motions for cause. So I believe that that would reflect that this court was very thoughtful and very into what was going to be fair to these jurors and not unfair to this defendant. And when we look at that abuse of discretion standard that we're going to apply on the trial court, the Curry versus State, 910 Southwest 2nd, 490, that we must show that this would indeed affect their deliberation. But I think both of these jurors at some point said, look, I'm in the middle here. I want to see, you know, you're asking me to make a decision and you've not told me. We see that so often in voir dire where jurors are, well, you're asking me to tell you this stuff, but I haven't seen anything and I can't make this decision because I haven't seen anything. And so I don't think we have abuse of discretion here.
But if they did clearly state that they would require the defendant to prove otherwise, well, that could be problematic.
It could be problematic, but I don't know that it's that 100% clear. I think one of the statements in the record from the prosecutor was, this is about as clear as mud, Judge. And I think that's probably fair in our reading of the record as well. And we could argue the judge go the other route, but the judge also made a time to spend with these jurors, talk to them, look at them, see them, and rely on that. And I don't think we should get to an abuse of discretion of the court's decision in that. In regards to the Border Patrol testimony, as the Justice Benavidez said, officers are allowed to rely on things that they hear from outside factors, particularly in the nature of probable cause. And nowhere in the record, the question was not asked, what did Border Patrol say to you? Was Border Patrol confirmed? We don't have a direct statement. We have a confirmation, much the same as we would have if, did you confirm via the dispatcher that their license was suspended before you got them out of the car? Those things happen every day. And those statements come in because it shows why the officer did what they did, how they did it, why they did it, puts things in perspective, which is outside the scope of the argument that this was offered. Also, I can't say that these were offered that they had to be for the truth of the matter because this wasn't an element of the offense. Their status is not an element.
But it did go to you proving her reason for
concealing. Go to intent. Yes, ma'am.
To intent.
And it does support the claims of intent, but not outside all those other factors as well. This was not the only testimony of intent in this case. The officer clearly testified as to the path of travel, the fact that she was from Conroe, which was identified in her driver's license. And this is
to hide.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
That's a reason to hide.
No, ma'am. But the fact that if you were traveling to Conroe from the path of travel she was coming from, you wouldn't turn the other direction. It's not in the you're turning away from the main road. You're turning further into back roads. That's taking you further from going home than your path to go home. And so the fact you're from Conroe, I don't hold anything against anybody from Conroe. Not at all.
So you like to take back roads.
Yes.
And not take the sometimes direct routes.
I would on a sideline with the court, not that back road. the road from Brackettville to Rock Springs is a quite perilous path at best. I think they got behind some goats and followed them and dug as they went. But that's a sideline, Judge, and I'm sorry.
I've not been down that way. Now you've made me curious. I may have to.
May want to take a ride up there.
Yes, it's, in broad daylight.
If you like hairpin turns at 15 miles an hour, it is a great road. They refer to it locally
right
as
vehicle,
the roller coaster.
That.
Yes, ma'am.
So the appellant has made an argument in its brief that, in her brief, I apologize, that the determination of the illegal status, you know, all, Deputy Mendez testified to was that she confirmed that they were in illegally. But I think the violation of the confrontation clause has been raised is the fact that there's no evidence of how this Border Patrol made that determination. I mean, they could have been in the country, you know, maybe on a claim of, blank on the name.
Asylum, Judge?
Asylum, an asylum claim or something of that sort. But because the Border Patrol didn't testify himself or herself, then none of that evidence was available for.
Right. And I think that that may be one of the issues I'd like the court to consider is the fact that we say that this is so harmful because they said Border Patrol confirmed this. But they even say to you, but if Border Patrol had been called, this evidence is coming in and it's all okay. So the evidence itself is not okay. They're complaining of the procedure at which it came in, not the evidence itself. So where do we have harm if it's okay when the only complaint is a, I got in my
Had they
hand.
had the opportunity to confront and
Just
cross-examine,
examine.
then the evidence
Yes.
may have been different.
But even if they had, and the cross-examination had said they're here legally, maybe they argue that that would go against the intent, but I don't think it changes what the evidence was with that concealment, because that's where we really push back to, is the fact that we have concealment. If none of that had been part of this, we still could have this conviction. And that when we look at those, the confrontation error status of those things that we're to look at, which the court discussed in Langham, quoting Scott in 305 Southwest 3rd 582, it was how important was it to the case? Is it cumulative of other evidence? Is it corroboration or contradicting on the points? And what is the overall strength of the case? And I think the case is very strong without that. I think that is a piece of, in effect, maybe a cherry on top, but it is not the ice cream. The ice cream is everything else involved in this, particularly the slouching below the window level of the car, because that is concealment at its very best, mixed in with these other factors. So I think when we look at that, in that case in Langham, they say the court must find a reasonable possibility that error moved non-persuasion to persuasion, that the only thing that made this happen was that evidence. And I don't think that we can find that on
Well,
the
let me ask you
facts.
this. I mean, you're saying that the fact that they were hiding or they were concealed, had they been determined to not be here illegally, you're saying that she could have been prosecuted anyway.
Yes, ma'am. There are cases pending now where we have U.S. citizen transporting U.S. citizen trying to hide them from the police. And that meets the definition of this offense.
But did that evidence need to be in this record?
It didn't have to be in this
Otherwise,
record.
I would have arrested them regardless.
It would be nice if we have that, but I can't recreate that. Okay. And in her
So
mind,
that begs the question. It is in this record. This is the case before us. The issue is this being as implied in this statute because the concealment was of evidence that's in this case put on by the state that they're illegal or not legal in the country, does that make it in this circumstance, this case?
I don't think that motive in and of itself makes this entire statute preempted as applied.
Don't think it
Oh,
makes the whole statute, but
right.
maybe in this case.
Yes, I understand where the court's view may be, but I would argue to the court that it's not, because this is not the crux of it. It is cumulative evidence. Obviously, the officer could testify to what she saw when she saw the card, that they were a Mexican national. What did you see? Doesn't mean that that's not a fake ID. It doesn't mean that it is completely invalid. It's just, this is what I saw. She testified to that. Then we have this on top of, and they confirm their status. It's extra. It's just cumulative. It doesn't change and make it harmful. And that's where the state fails with that. If there are no other questions, we feel that the conviction should be affirmed. That the statute is valid, as the Flores court said, both as applied and facially, and that there is no error in the trial court that abused its discretion. And we ask you to affirm the conviction. I'll
Thank
give you
you.
back my time.
Thank you.
May it please the court. So I'd just like to address a couple arguments. The Flores court did not reach an as-applied preemption claim. They actually said that these facts would be persuasive in an as-applied context. Another thing I want to add is that additional facts of concealment does not show that the state did not enter a preempted field. Again, the field is non-citizen smuggling. So additional facts of concealment don't disprove that fact. Instead, It's just why it just shows that she was in fact smuggling non-citizens. Facts such as the passengers having a state warrant out for their arrest, or facts that the passengers were being trafficked. Those are state interests that the state can prosecute under, right? But if the passengers are being smuggled because they are non-citizens, that is a federally preempted field, right? The additional facts to show how she did that don't make it not
So
preempted.
that's the federal purpose that you allege is being obstructed here.
Yes, Your Honor. And speaking of obstruction, I'd like to bring up 2 points on conflict preemption quickly. Ms. Gutierrez, and this was not in my brief, so I'm sorry to make more work for your clerk. She could not have gotten a 10-year sentence under federal law. The max she could have got was 5 years. Second, the state's burden of proof is severely weakened by using this neutral statute. Under federal law, the state has to prove that the driver knew or should have known of the passenger's illegal status. So by applying this neutral statute here, it conflicts with the purpose of the federal regime. Are there any other questions on preemption? I'd like to then talk about the veneer. I strongly disagree with the idea that a poison pill was thrown into the veneer. They identify this confusion, this poison pill, on page 64 of the veneer transcript. I'd like to read something from page 69 of the veneer transcript. And this is defense counsel. The presumption of innocence says that even though you know, statistically speaking, that people are very likely to be guilty with what they're charged with, that when you go back into that jury room and listen to the evidence and decide whether or not there's enough quantity or enough and enough quality of evidence, you really need to be convinced. So he expressly disclaimed this idea that he was trying to confuse the jurors. Instead, he was explaining how we view one legal principle in everyday life. And when you're a veneerman, you have to change that. You have to presume that the defendant is innocent. And again, these veneermen were explaining the law explicitly in their individual veneer, and they never once said, "Yes, I can follow the law. I will presume Ms. Gutierrez innocent." Let me see. I'd also like to quickly address the Confrontation Clause harm analysis. It is that this court needs to be sure beyond a reasonable doubt that Border Patrol's testimony did not affect the jurors' deliberation. It's an extremely high standard. And the fact that it was relied upon and it was the primary use to prove motive should lead to a finding of harm. Do I have any other questions on any of the issues before this court?
Question, Judge?
I'm good.
Thank you, guys.
Been a great job.
Thank
Interesting
you.
case.
Thank you.
Both sides. Oops.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a
The
good day.
case will be under submission.